Hi, everyone. Welcome this evening. We're so honored to have you here tonight on this live Q&A call with Dr. Mark Hyman. Just going to check in really quickly. Do we have Dr. Hyman here with us?
I'm right here.
Oh, fantastic. Great. I know everybody's super excited to be here with you tonight, Dr. Hyman, so thank you for joining us. I'll remind everybody why we're here. For those folks that have joined on tonight's call or listening to tonight's recording, which is almost over 800 of you, you've been given access to this bonus content because you've been a part of this movement. You've gotten a few books, three or more, to share with your friends, your family members, and it means the world to us that you're a part of spreading this message a little bit further. So we want to thank you for being here with us tonight, and hopefully we get a chance. We've had so many questions sent in to us. Hopefully we get a chance to get to as many of them as we can. Now, a few housekeeping items before we go into the questions that we have this evening. We're going to spend the next hour going through questions with Dr. Hyman. And then from there, we also have a very special guest with us. We have Lisa here from the Ultra Wellness Center, who's going to be joining us towards the last 30 minutes of the call, which will be the last 90 minutes portion of the call. And she's going to be taking many of the nutritional questions that have been sent in that are some great questions that everybody's asked here. So we're looking for a very exciting call. We're going to have about an hour of questions with Dr. Hyman, and then we're going to tackle about another 30 minutes of questions with Lisa on the line with us here. So Dr. Hyman, again, thank you for joining us here. I'm going to start off with something that a lot of people who have just recently bought the book are very interested in understanding, especially because many of them have not had a chance yet to do a deep dive on the book, which is, what inspired you to write this book, Eat Fat, Get Thin, in the first place?
Well, you know, as many of you know, I wrote a number of books on sugar, like the Blood Sugar Solution, 10-Day Detox Diet, and I was really focusing on this issue of foods that actually are causing this obesity epidemic by causing insulin production in the body, which causes fat storage. It's like fertilizer for your fat cells. And I realized that, you know, I was recommending people eat a different kind of diet, and actually when I looked at the recommendations, it was 50% fat, and I began to kind of look more at the issue of fat, and I realized that I was pretty ill-informed, although I thought I was well-informed. I think I was better informed than most, but still, I didn't have all the answers on fat. I had a sort of surface layer, and I really wanted to know more. And second, I really realized that there's a broad range of Americans that still believe that fat makes you fat and that fat causes heart disease. And both these things have been clearly disproven. So even many, many doctors, scientists, researchers still hold on to this idea like a pit bull. And it's really one of the main ideas that has driven so much of our obesity epidemic, which is the reduction in fat and the increase in sugar and carbs. So when you cut out the sugar and carbs, what do you eat? Well, you can eat a lot of vegetables, but there's not a lot of calories there. Where do you get your calories from? Well, you can get them from protein, but protein, you can't eat that much protein, and it also can turn into sugar. So the other thing that you can eat is fat. And fat actually turns out doesn't raise insulin. It doesn't cause fat storage. It shuts off your hunger. It increases metabolism, increases muscle mass. It does everything that you think it didn't, it actually does. It even fixes cholesterol.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And for our own knowledge, and I know a lot of people on the call are interested too, this is your 10th New York Times bestseller, your 12th book overall. How have you found the response? What's been the response so far, and what have you seen from people who have been diving into the book and doing the program?
Well, people have been loving it. We did a 1,000-person challenge, and we had so many people who had just really great results, and even better in some ways than some of the other programs I've done, because they really helped them cut off the cravings and help drop more weight and help get off insulin and diabetes medications and really see dramatic changes. So I've been kind of really excited about the people's responses to actually doing the program and reading and understanding it. What's really been shocking to me is this is the backlash that I've had from some of my scientific colleagues, nutritionists, really kind of calling me into question for saying that fat is actually not bad for you, that actually we should be adding more fat to our diet, that even saturated fats may not be the enemy we once thought they were. And then, in fact, it's not all about the calories. We're still stuck on this whole calorie in, calorie out strategy.
And And just one more follow-up question on that, Dr. Hyman, because I'm sure people are interested. You know, in the book, it's outlined so well, and it's almost like a no-brainer to understand how important fat is for our daily health and wellness and our long-term health and wellness. Why do you think there's so much resistance to this idea? Is it just that we've been marketed the wrong idea for such a long time?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is, you know, it just seems logical, right? Like the earth seems flat. It looks flat. You can stand on a tallest building, it seems flat, and you can sail across the ocean, it still seems flat. But the truth is, it's not flat. And just because fat has more calories and carbs and protein, and that fat that you eat looks like the fat on your body, it doesn't actually translate that fat. Science is a little more complex. The body is a little more complex. It's hard for people to give that up. And the whole messaging of our government, of nutritionists, of doctors, in the food industry is that it's all about the calories. It's all calories in, calories out for weight loss. And all calories are the same. I had a discussion with the vice chairman of Pepsi. He said, listen, 1,800 calories of Pepsi is the same as 1,800 calories of almonds or broccoli. And that's just an absurd notion. They're the same when you burn them in a lab, but they're not the same when you eat them. When you eat them, they go through your metabolism. And your metabolism is not a math problem. It's a dynamic process affected by hormones, by your gut flora, by immune system, by your brain chemistry, by so many different factors that are not exactly calorie related. It's more about the information in food. So that's the first thing. And then the heart hypothesis, well, that's been pretty discredited. I think that the government has come up and said, you know, no longer need to restrict dietary fat. It's not related to heart disease. And more studies are coming out showing that what we thought was a link was really not. And it was just based on some bad evidence from a long time ago. And I cover that in the book. And I think I think that the whole field is changing, but it's still hard because there's a lot of people think, well, you're eating fat and cholesterol, it's actually going to end up with cholesterol and fat in your arteries. It just, again, it doesn't work like that. What turns the fat and cholesterol in your arteries is actually sugar and refined carbs, because your liver produces in your body all the saturated fats, and the cholesterol is driving so much of the problem. Eating saturated fat doesn't affect your blood levels of saturated fat at all, which is kind of surprising, but it actually doesn't. So I think it's logical for people to have this misconception, but by kind of looking at the science, we can kind of separate, as I say, fat from fiction and come up with a much better view of actually how the body works.
Well said. And final question, Dr. Hyman, before we jump into tonight's questions here, you yourself at one point were recommending a lower fat diet and also were eating that way because that's what you knew at the time. What have you seen as the biggest shift over a period of time of including more fat in your diet personally? What shifted in your own health?
Well, you know, I typically, you know, thought that, and I trained in medical school in the early 80s, which was the heyday of the low-fat era, so I was eating pasta and bread and rice, and, you know, the government told us to eat 6 to 11 servings of bread, rice, cereal, and pasta a day, and I did that. I exercised. I ran 5 miles a day, but my body just wasn't that muscular, and I was kind of a little flabby, and I had, like, these little love handles that started developing in my 40s, and I gained about 15 pounds. And I was like, well, what's going on? And then I began to kind of see the research and dig into this issue around sugar and carbs, and I cut that way back. But I still ate a lot of starch. I still ate, you know, whole grains and beans and a lot of starch and, you know, some sugar, but, you know, minimal. And not so much fat, because, again, I thought fat was bad and butter was bad and saturated fat was bad and animal foods are bad. And I basically decided to switch myself and my patients based on the research. And my body leaned way up. I didn't do any more exercise. In fact, I did less. I had much more muscle tone. My sort of love handles turned into a six-pack, and my body weight went down 15%. I just had a body composition test, which is, you know, we're looking at your, through an X-ray, basically looking at the measurement of body fat. And I had like 1.5 pounds of body fat in my trunk, which is where the organ fat is, and that's the most dangerous fat, and that's extremely little fat. So, and I'm 56 years old, and I'm not an exercise fanatic, although I wish I could exercise more, but it's really about the food. And as I've increased the fat, I felt better, I had more energy, my brain works better, I'm more clear, I sleep better, everything works better.
Incredible. All right, great setup there, Dr. Hyman. We're going to jump right into the questions that people have asked. Now, one of the most common questions, probably the most common question that we got over and over was, what is a typical day? You know, when we talk about including more fat in our day and in our diet and the beneficial properties of it, what does a typical day look like for Dr. Hyman himself when it comes to food?
For me, it's really one of two diets, one of two breakfasts. For example, this morning, I'm on a trip with my son and some friends, and a fairly typical breakfast, I have a protein shake, or I call it a fat shake, with nuts and seeds, with chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, almond butter, coconut butter, frozen berries, coconut milk, maybe I put some other things in, like a lemon or different things. And that's usually a very filling, sustaining breakfast. It's no sugar and refined carbs, just some blueberries, but a lot of fiber, a lot of protein, a lot of fat. Or like this morning, I had an egg, avocado, sliced tomato. We had some leftover organic lamb burgers from last night. I had a little, like a lamb patty, and then with an egg and a lamb patty and avocado and tomato with some olive oil and salt on it, and that's kept me going. For lunch, we were going to hit this great place, and I had like a small piece of bison, which is like a little tiny grass-fed bison, and I had like a huge plate of spinach and greens, and that was my lunch. So that's typically what I'll eat. I'll eat like, or I'll have a fat salad for lunch. I'll have greens with lots of fatty things on them, like olives, pumpkin seeds, avocados, and then I might put some wild salmon, which has more omega-3 fats, or sardines, and olive oil. So it's like fat on fat on fat. I call it a fat salad. And then, you know, it's like everybody wants a light dressing, no sugar dressing, everything. So I think that the other thing is for dinner, I'll have usually a piece of fish, or maybe I'll have sometimes soy protein, like tempeh or tofu that's non-GMO, and I'll have a piece of, you know, grass-fed lamb, or I don't eat red meat a ton, but, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks I'll have grass-fed meat. Usually as a condiment, and then I'll have like 3/4 of my plate is vegetables, so I'll make sauteed mushrooms, I'll make broccolini, I'll make maybe another salad, or I'll have a bunch of roasted cauliflower, or I'll have big tomato cucumber salad, or some just tons of veggies. And maybe I'll have a starch like a sweet potato or something like that, but not all the time. And then for dessert, if I wanted something, which I usually don't, I'll have like maybe frozen blackberries, canned coconut milk with all the fat in it, which is really, really great.
All right. I'm going to keep on the theme of food. And you talked a little bit about your day. When it comes to, there's an incredible blog post that you've written about making sure you don't get caught in a food emergency. As it relates to the Eat Fat Get Thin program and in your own life, what are your favorite snacks to keep around so that you can continue to stay on the program and eat the way that you do?
Well, you know, I travel a lot, probably a lot more than I should. And, you know, I'm pretty focused on making sure I never end up in a food emergency, because I don't want to be in an airport and have to eat crap. So I bring with me a lot of packets of nut butters, almond butter, macadamia butter, pecan, walnut butters, coconut butter even. I'll bring some tonka bars, which I like, which are made from bison, and they're have good quality fats and protein, no sugar. And then I'll have kind bars. Some of the kind bars are actually quite low in sugar and have nuts and seeds, and the government wouldn't label them as a health food or have a health claim because they had too much fat in them from the nuts. I have a bag of nuts sometimes, just a bag of nuts, and that's usually what I have. And it keeps me going, and I don't really have to worry about what I'm going to eat, and just take care of myself in the way that I can get through a whole day without doing anything.
All right. One follow-up question on the snacks that a listener has sent in over here. What does Dr. Hyman think of snacking on popcorn popped on the stovetop with coconut oil and topped with ghee?
Well, here's the problem. You know, there isn't a ton, you know, of sugar in popcorn, but it is, and you can eat a lot. I mean, I remember used to eat, like, popcorn. I would, like, have a giant bowl. It was, like, it would be enough to feed 14 people. I'd probably eat the whole thing myself. So that's the danger of popcorn. Also, it has a risk if you're adding fat to it. It has a risk of being what I call sweet fat, where you add carbs and protein together. You actually accelerate the storage of fat because insulin's increased, so it's really important to actually not do that. It's so I encourage you all not to, you know, have a ton of popcorn in the treat occasionally, but be careful.
All right, great. So we're going to continue on the food theme here before we switch over to some other questions. A listener here is asking a question about microwaving. Is it ever okay, Dr. Hyman, to use the microwave?
You know, I don't want to cook with microwaves because it does alter the biochemistry of the food in a way that creates something called advanced glycation end products, which are glycated proteins, kind of like the crust on a bread, and or creme brulee. And it can be harmful, inflammatory, cause aging. And so I really don't recommend that. I think if you want to heat something up quickly, it's okay, but you know, it doesn't take much longer to heat something up on a pan than it does in a microwave.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we're going to switch here. We'll come back to some food questions in a little bit. We have a lot of people that wrote in about ketogenic diets and just what your thoughts are overall about a ketogenic diet. Do you incorporate it and use it in your clinical setting, and what are your thoughts about it overall?
I don't recommend it for everybody, but for targeted patients, it can be very effective. It's been used in brain disorders like seizure disorders. It's used in, there's research going on now in Alzheimer's and brain cancer. And I think for certain patients who are severely carbohydrate intolerant, it can be very effective. I'm with a guy right now who's a doctor, who's from Newfoundland, was really severe pre-diabetes metabolic syndrome, and even any starch really affected him. So he was basically on 70-80% fat diet, as you know, maybe 25 grams of carbs and a moderate amount of protein, and checks his ketones every day, and he's got his cholesterol numbers fixed. He's got his weight down 20 pounds. So really, the body has an amazing ability to respond if it's the right approach.
Okay, great. So a follow-up question on the ketogenic diet is that for those, is there anybody that you would suggest that would not be a good fit for a ketogenic diet or program?
I think, you know, you have to try for yourself. There are some people who are severely carbohydrate intolerant, and those are the people I would be more likely to try it. It's not the first thing I recommend. The Keep Fat Get Thin program is not a ketogenic diet. But it's not the first thing to try. If you get stuck and you really are severely carb intolerant, if you have visceral belly fat, organ fat, big belly, high triglycerides, low HDL, high sugar, high insulin, if your insulin's really, really high, that might be an indication, because the only way to get your insulin down is to not eat carbs and have fat and protein. So, and vegetables. By the way, when I say carbs, I mean sugar and refined carbs, starch, starchy veggies. You know, because broccoli is a carb, asparagus is a carb, an artichoke is a carb. So those are all fine. We should be having 80% of our diet as carbs, basically, but that's by volume. By calories, it's going to be more fat than anything else.
All right, great. Thanks for that. All right, let's continue down the list of questions that folks have been writing in. So we have a listener here who's written in here who wanted to know, are you allowed – and what does Dr. Hyman think of kombucha? They make their own with organic tea, distilled water, and organic sugar, but they're not really sure if whether or not it's something that you would encourage somebody to do while following this plan here.
I mean, kombucha typically has a lot of sugar, so I don't typically recommend a lot of that as a treat. Sometimes it's okay, but not really something that I would do on a regular basis, especially if you have gut issues or yeast issues.
Okay, great. Next question that we have here. What does Dr. Hyman think about intermittent fasting, and does he incorporate it into his own daily or weekly routine?
Absolutely. You know, intermittent fasting means eating dinner and not eating till breakfast. That's what it means. Or actually, you know, maybe having early dinner and having a breakfast, and that's really a very important thing for our body to repair and heal. But like when your brain goes to sleep, it repairs, it reorganizes, it resets. Your metabolism needs to do the same thing, so it needs that fasting period where you don't eat for 14 hours. And that's not hard to do if you eat dinner at 6 and don't eat till 8 in the morning, right? So it's really possible to actually help speed up your metabolism by doing this in the right way. Some people want to do it until lunch, that's okay, or eat most of their calories between you know, 12 noon and 8 at night, that's okay. I think it really depends on you and what you're trying to achieve and what's going on. I don't think it's necessary for everybody. I think you can be fine with eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But I think it's important to understand you shouldn't be eating late at night because that drives so much problems.
All right. Great. This is a bigger picture question. So a listener writes in, if someone is just beginning to clean up their diet and they're still having some refined sugars and processed carbs in their diet, should they still increase their fat intake?
If they've cut out the processed carbs and sugar in their diet, should they still increase their fat intake, right?
If they've just begun the process of cleaning up their diet, but they haven't cut out all processed sugars and carbs, they still have some, should they still increase their dietary fat intake?
I think it's tricky. What I would say is it's the reason I created a 21-day program is because when you want to reset your system, you have to reset it. So if you start eating more fat with a lot of starchy carbs or sugar, you're going to still have a high insulin level, and that's going to create problems. So the key is to get your insulin level down, which can take a few weeks to reset and become more insulin sensitive and to fix your metabolism. And then you can start to sort of see how much wiggle room you have. So some people, it might take 6 months or a year doing this before they can start to incorporate that. Others may be shorter, depending on what's going on with them.
Okay, great. So we have another person writing in here. How can I balance the recommendations to eat only a small amount of meat and soy to decrease the risk of cancer while also balancing out your recommendations to eat protein at every meal? Do those recommendations conflict with each other?
That's a great question. Well, first let's talk about protein, right? Protein is nuts. Protein is seeds. Protein is beans. Protein is whole grains, although those are starchy. Protein is eggs. Protein is fish. Protein is chicken. Protein is grass-fed meats or, you know, lamb. Those are all proteins. So you don't have to eat a ton of meat to actually do this. And soy foods are concerning for people because, one, there's GMO, most of them, and two, they are processed in ways that are quite harmful, most of the soy that's eaten in America. If it's traditional soy foods like non-GMO, organic, soybean foods like tofu or tempeh, in moderate amounts, those are not concerning at all to me. The data shows that they don't cause cancer, that they're not hormonally disruptive, that they actually may be protective against cancer, whereas the other soy foods are not. All the stuff that's in the fake foods like soy hot dogs and soy burgers, soy meat, all that's bad stuff. So I think that's important. Second is, you know, the meat issue, you know, I wrote a lot about it in the book, and I think there's really three issues when it comes to meat: moral, environmental, and health. So the moral, no problem. If you're a Buddhist, you don't eat meat, no problem. If environmental, yes, we shouldn't be factory farming animals, huge detriment to the environment. Can grass-fed animal farming and husbandry actually improve the environment? There's some people who say they do, restorative grazing. So let's just sort of put that on the side. Then there's the health issues, which are important because you don't eat meat if it's going to cause cancer or kill you. And when you look at the data, it's confusing. There's a lot of studies that show there's no impact, and a lot of studies that show there is impact. And so when you start to look at what does it show, the meat eaters typically that showed where they showed there was a risk were the people who were really unhealthy. They smoked more, they drank more, they ate less fruits and vegetables, they didn't exercise, they didn't take vitamins, they were more overweight, they ate more. So they weren't healthy. When you look at meat eaters and vegetarians who shopped at health food stores, who basically are eating meat in the context of an overall healthy diet, their risk of death was cut in half. So I think it's important to kind of understand which populations you're looking at. As far as the cancer, the processed meat is definitely an issue. I would be concerned about that. But the risks are small. The risks are small, and the risks, for example, go from 2.6 to 3.2% or something like that. So it's like a 0.6% increased risk over your lifetime of getting colon cancer from eating bacon, which doesn't sound very impressive, and it's not. It's a 30% increase in your risk, right, from 2.6 to 3.2, but it's an absolute risk is very small. So I think there is a risk, but I'm not encouraging really a lot of processed meat like deli meats and bologna and salami and pepperoni, and that's not good. But, you know, grass-fed meats and good whole egg, that's fine. I don't worry about that at all. And I think, you know, do we want to eat less meat to have less impact on the planet? Sure. But I don't think meat is harmful from the perspective of health. And I really took a good look at the data. I think a lot of people disagree with me. I think that's fine. Everybody kind of can look at their own perspective. But I think you have to sort of look at the science and just see what it actually says.
All right. Great answer. Thank you for that, Dr. Hyman. Another follow-up protein question, kind of an amalgam of two questions that we have here. For someone who's trying to build lean tone muscle and is working out quite regularly, some heavy lifting or CrossFit at least about 3 to 5 times a week, is this program still a good fit for them, or would you suggest any modifications?
Well, there's a whole view of you know, people who work out intensely, they need carb loading. And I think that's been brought into question. Some researchers, Finney and Volek, who looked at exercise performance and extremely low-carb diet. So they actually written a book called The Art of Low-Carbohydrate Performance, which details the science behind switching your body from burning carbs to burning fat. You have way more fat in your body than stored carbs. Like, you have 2,500 calories of glycogen, but you might have 20,000 or 40,000 calories of fat stored in your body. So if you can switch to fat burning, you're going to be much better off. And I think this is pretty evident from the data. So I think that you can actually do this and be fine. You have to see what your body is actually requiring, but yes.
All right, great. Dr. Hyman, this is a question regarding one of your fellow contemporaries and friends. The listener writes in that says, Dr. Ludwig seems to have, you and Dr. Ludwig seem to have slightly different opinions on grains and bean consumptions. He uses it a lot in his plan, Always Hungry, that you have recommended, and you limit them in your meal plans. For someone who wants to lose weight, how would you recommend navigating around this?
Well, Dr. Ludwig, actually, if you look at his early program at the beginning of it, it's much more aggressive, right? It's very low carb and much higher in fat. So once he gets people's metabolism to switch, they actually can have more ability to include more grains and beans. And I do that, include that after 21 days. I do include beans and grains for those who want to try.
Okay, great. Here's a great question about exercise. Can you talk a little bit more about exercise, Dr. Hyman? You mentioned working out much less than before, and I'd love to hear what types of exercise you recommend and practice in your own life.
Well, I do different things. So I run, I bike when it's nice weather, I do yoga, I hike, I play tennis, I play basketball when my son's around. I do, when I'm on the road and just running around, I do a 7-minute workout, which is super intense, high-intensity interval training, I'll do that. So I kind of do a lot of different things. I ski. I like to just do a lot of different physical things.
Okay, great.
But I don't actually do something every day, although I'd like to.
We all know how hard you're working, how many patients you're seeing, so we can concur with that. Here's a great question about another fellow friend and individual in the community. So the listener writes in about bulletproof coffee. They're wondering if they're not currently drinking coffee right now, should they consider incorporating bulletproof coffee into their routine? And does Dr. Hyman have any thoughts about that?
I mean, if people don't want to have coffee, you don't have to have coffee. It's not, and some people don't tolerate coffee at all. So I'm not a big proponent if you don't. It's not like a health food. If you want it, it's fine. It doesn't bother you. Okay. As far as bulletproof coffee, I think MCT oil is a very powerful trigger for ketones in the body, for shutting down appetite, for speeding up your metabolism. There's a lot of benefits. So I recommend using MCT oil. You can put it in tea. You can put it in coffee. You can put it in a shake. You can put it in salad. Butter, you know, you can use grass-fed butter. It's hard to find in New Zealand. It's probably, I'm pretty sure you can get it. Even the Irish Kerrygold butter, which I talk about, is not 100% grass-fed. So I think that you really, you know, have to see how it affects you. So I really would see how you deal with that. I would see what happens to your cholesterol numbers. I'd see how your body responds. But I think it's really individual.
Okay, great. Another follow-up question about MCT oil. This listener was using MCT oil for a few days at a time, works perfectly fine, and then out of the blue seems to be getting the runs very badly. They want to know, has Dr. Hyman ever experienced that with any of his other patients?
Sometimes people aren't used to eating. Yeah, people aren't used to eating that much fat, so they can get digestive issues. So I would sort of go a little slower, less fat. With MCT oil, you might need digestive enzymes. I talk about that in the book. I'd encourage you to try that. And those are great ways of actually reducing the problem.
Okay, great. Another digestive-related question. This listener is eating a lot of greens and sometimes feels bloated. Is that common, and does Dr. Hyman have any recommendations?
Eating a lot of greens and being bloated? Not necessarily. I think, you know, it depends what you're eating. If it's kale and that whole collard group, some people have trouble with cruciferous vegetables and cause gas, so like cabbage. But things like other greens, like spinach, I don't think they usually do. It's often a sign of digestive issues. If you have bacterial overgrowth or other issues, then that might be a problem. So you have to kind of make sure you pay attention to what your overall gut flora is. And my guide Beyond Food, which you can get if you bought the book, I talk about how to tend your inner garden, and that's really important.
Okay, fantastic. This question comes from somebody that's on the challenge currently. They're experiencing great results using the current supplements, and they're wondering after the program if you recommend other supplements or should they continue down the list of supplements that they're currently taking.
Yeah, I think the Energy Pack is a great long-term supplement. It's what I like to take, if you can, carnitine, they help my mitochondria, got a fish oil, vitamin D. It's really a great all-around support. I think the MCT oil is optional. The PGX is optional, especially if you're back in your ideal weight. I don't use it myself because I'm not dealing with insulin resistance, but if you are, it can be very helpful. So it really depends on the individual, and it can be very effective in the right time period.
Okay. Fantastic. This is a question about skin and oily skin and oily hair. This listener writes in that they're eating a lot of fats in their diet, coconut oil, avocado, olive oil, nuts, flax seeds, and they're noticing that from time to time their hair and skin feels a little bit more greasy. Not sure if you have any opinion on that, but hey, we said anything, any questions go.
Yeah, you know, it's unusual. Usually when you have good omega-3 fats, your hair gets shiny. You know, your skin doesn't usually get oily. It's not sort of correlated.
So there might be something else there that the person should look a little deeper into.
Yeah, I think it might be some other factor.
Okay, great. We have a question here about another supplement-related question. Do you recommend PGX for everyone? Are there some people that you find that don't respond very well to PGX? Open-ended question.
Well, PGX is you know, it's a fiber. So people are like consuming very little fiber, and they start eating fiber, they're going to feel it, right? Or if their gut flora is a mess, they're going to feel it. But most of us, you know, we evolved eating 100 to 150 grams of fiber a day, and now we eat about 8 to 15, which is terrible. And, you know, it's like it's something we have to get used to eating more fiber. So I think PGX is a great fiber supplement. It's a prebiotic. It's really good for you. I think, you know, if you're an ideal weight, if you don't have metabolism issues, you're not dealing with cravings, you're not insulin resistant, your lipids are fine, no, I don't think you need it.
Okay, great. Another sort of supplemental-related question on potato starch. Is there any other recommended ways besides water of consuming potato starch and following the Eat Fat Get Thin program?
Yeah, you could put it in something else. You can put it in a shake or a smoothie, or you could you could do that. It's kind of hard to take, but it can be effective. And again, it's an optional add-on that people can try if they want. It's not an essential part of the program.
Okay, great. This listener is writing about some concerns around losing too much weight and how fat plays an impact in that. So she writes in, I've read that when you're eating very healthy, your body will get to the weight that it wants to, so I don't obsess too much about any particular number. I'm currently 127 pounds, which I believe is right around where I should be. My question is, when I implement the Eat Fat Get Thin program and fat speeds up my metabolism, will I keep losing weight and get too thin?
Well, you know, the answer is you could. I think some people do need more carbohydrates. And so you have to find out what's right for you. I met a girl the other day who was a vegan, got very sick on being vegan diet, was a professional surfer, and then she switched to eating just really good food and higher fat diet, cut all the starch and carbs, and she feels awesome, but she lost a bunch of weight and she's having trouble keeping it on. So I think you know, you have to sort of find out what's right for you. You might need more sweet potatoes with your squash, or into more black or brown rice, and that's okay.
So there's a follow-up question to that, and I know we addressed it on our challenge call for those folks that are in the challenge, but I think this is somebody that's not part of the challenge. This listener writes in, how do you know if you're consuming the right amount of fat? What sorts of things would you be looking at daily to see whether or not you're consuming too much or too little fat?
Well, I don't really worry about it. Honestly, I think, you know, you just want to include fatty, good whole foods. So avocados, nuts and seeds, extra virgin olive oil, you know, whole eggs, wild fish, sardines, wild salmon. You can't go wrong if you do that. If you start taking like 5 tablespoons of coconut butter a day, yeah, that's not normal. You know, but you can use olive oil. I mean, the studies showed, for example, at the PREDIMED study, they looked at giving people a liter of olive oil a week to consume, and they found there was a dramatic reduction in heart disease risk and weight. So, yeah, you can tolerate a lot. I just would be just smart about eating whole, real foods.
All right. Fantastic. So we have someone writing in here who's just, this is the first book of yours that they've purchased. They're not familiar, but they had heard about it through the Fat Summit, and they got very excited. So their question is, not having dived into the book, is this a dietary lifestyle that you follow only for 21 days, or is this a lifestyle change that you continue after the program? And I guess their follow-up question is that after I'm done this, do I start incorporating back more carbs into my diet the way I did before I started the program?
Well, the answer is it depends. And in the book, I go through, you know, a 21-day program, then a transition plan, which goes into what I call the Pegan diet. And the Pegan diet is basically a more broad range of foods that still is low glycemic. It still has good fats. It still incorporates principles of healthy nutrition, but is adaptable to where you are, right? If you are, you know, someone like me, you know, I have a lot of, like, diabetes in my family, prediabetes, heart disease. But like I know, I've gotten myself into a state of metabolic state that's super healthy. And when you look at the research on sugar and carbs and insulin, it is a driver of almost all chronic disease. If you look at heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, aging, all the phenomena of aging are driven by refined carbs and sugar in this process of insulin resistance. So the key isn't whether you should have this much carb or that much carb or this much fat or that much carb. It's like, what is your particular biology? Are you insulin resistant or not? You know, and that's really key. And if you don't actually know that, then you can't adjust your diet. So I was mentioning this guy earlier who was on ketosis. So he was not able to get his insulin down and his sugar down, and his lipids down, if he did not eat a very, very high-fat diet and very little carbs. But for me, I can. I can eat a little more. So I might have a little more black rice or, you know, something like that. I'm not so worried about it. But it really depends on the individual. So it's important for you to sort of see what works for you. And I describe in the book how you measure that. I describe how you measure your lipid particles and number, how you look at your insulin resistance and measure insulin. It's really important. It's probably the most important thing in terms of your overall healthy aging. And I think this program is really designed to keep your insulin as low as possible, and you should do that forever. If you want to stay healthy and feel good, it is critical to do that. Now, depending on your biology, your genetics, you may be more or not carbohydrate intolerant. Some people are less carbohydrate intolerant, some people are more. It really depends on the individual. So I would just find out what your particular biology is and then work with that. And you might need to be on an extremely low-carb diet, or you might be able to tolerate more. It depends on you.
Okay, great. So follow-up question on that about personalization. If somebody's looking to take this to the next level and get even more personalized, the listener here writes in, does Dr. Hyman recommend that I work with a functional medicine doctor, or should I go just see a nutritionist who can help me dial in on my diet a little bit further?
I think it depends where you are in your health status. You know, the average person can, you know, just do this on themselves. They can work with a nutritionist, and if they really have more challenging issues, you need to work with a doctor. And I encourage you to find a functional medicine doctor, because they often can really help you sort through the challenges that you might have if you're stuck somewhere.
All right. Switching topics here, we have a listener that's writing in that they're doing fantastic with the eating portion of the program. They're doing great with that, but they're having challenges with the de-stressing parts, the detox baths, journaling, exercise, and they're wondering if you have any sort of bigger picture advice for them. They're good on the food side, they just can't seem to consistently follow through on the other recommendations that are part of the program.
You know, I think that the initial time is food is okay, and then as you start to feel better, you're going to want to do more. So I think you kind of got to be good to yourself. I find that, you know, it doesn't have to be a lot. If I'm busy and I just maybe want to take 5 minutes in the morning when I wake up to meditate, or 10, it makes a huge difference. If I don't have time for a whole workout, I can really, really focus on a small amount. Like I can do a 7-minute workout. And I always have time for that. If you don't have 7 minutes in a day, you know, something's wrong. So I think you just have to sort of find out simple ways that you can do this that aren't too onerous, that don't take a lot of time, and just start small.
Okay, great. So this question is a little bit more about planning. We have what looks like maybe a health coach that's writing in here. It's saying she teaches health classes to a lot of low-income families. What's the best bang for the buck to feeding your family on a limited income? Does Dr. Hyman have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. You know, I actually done a lot of work in this area, and I looked at the data. And when you actually look at the studies, it's actually pretty doable. And I work for the Environmental Working Group on the board, and I'm actually doing a, I've done a lot of work in this area. They have a great guide called Good Food on a Tight Budget, which is how to eat food that's good for you, good for your wallet, and good for the planet. And that's so, so important, because if you don't do that, you're kind of not going to be able to eat real food. And so the key to this guide is that it helps you to choose the cheaper cuts of meat, the cheaper cuts of vegetables, the cheaper fruits, the things that are economically good. And then you can also look at the ones you should buy organic and the ones that don't matter if you buy organic. Because, if you look at certain vegetables and fruits, they're more toxic. They have more pesticide residues. So you really need to sort of stay away from the ones that are the worst and most toxic. So, yes, you can eat well for less, and it's doable. You just have to know what you're doing.
All right. Fantastic. We have a question here, another question about what practices are best for relaxation. A listener writes in here, does Dr. Hyman have any best practices that he uses himself to decompress, de-stress, and still feel like he has enough time for his diet and other things that he wants to give love and attention to?
Absolutely. I learned over the years how to take care of myself, because if I don't, I can't function. So I get enough sleep, I eat good food, I make sure I try to move every day somewhat. If I can't do a lot, I'll do a little. When I go too hard for a different period, let's say I'm at Cleveland Clinic, I'll just make sure I go to yoga class after work, or I'll just make sure I just take a little time. And if you if you know how to recharge, you can just hit the reset button. Sometimes all I have time for is a 10-minute steam in my house, and I go on ice bath, and that can really rejuvenate me, or I just do a little bit of a meditation, or take a walk. I mean, just simple things make a huge difference. And I think if you focus on that, or I just call a friend and talk to a friend, or go visit somebody, those things make a huge difference. And I you get to find out what works for you.
Okay, great. All right. So we have another question about a few questions related to around blood work and testing and working with your doctor. So one of the first questions that's written in is that what do you for individuals who have high cholesterol who aren't sure if their cholesterol is the big particles or the low particles, what would you recommend for them regarding the EFAT Get Thin program? Should they get tested first before they start the program, or can they go ahead and continue on the program even if they have high cholesterol?
Well, it's really important to look at the quality of the cholesterol. I talk about this a lot in the book. So everybody's been focused on LDL cholesterol, but it's not the best predictor of heart disease. Total cholesterol to HDL ratio is much better. Even better is your particle size and number, which most doctors do not measure. So I think it's really, really important to actually eat foods that help increase your particle size and reduce the number. And that's actually fat. And sugar and refined carbs do the opposite. So you might see a rise in your total and LDL cholesterol, but it's more important to look at the quality of it. Does your particle number go down? Your particle size go up? Do your triglycerides go down? Does your HDL go up? One of the only things that raises HDL is actually, you know what? It's saturated fat. So I think we kind of have things quite wrong, and I think it's really important that we really figure out this whole cholesterol thing, Chris. It's so confusing for people, and when you really look at the studies, it's really the quality that matters, and the quality is made better typically by fat and made worse by sugar and carbs.
Okay, great. Another question about doctor's recommendation. My doctor wants to start me on statins. I've not tried your program before, but I'm looking to try it. Should I try your program first before I make the leap?
Absolutely. I'm very concerned about statins. I discuss them in the book. I don't think they're useful for prevention. If you've had a heart attack or have some risk factors, it may be beneficial, but there are downsides. It can increase the risk of diabetes. It can increase the risk of dementia. It can increase the risk of muscle damage, sexual dysfunction. It inhibits your ability to exercise and get benefit from it. So it's really, really important.
Okay, another follow-up question on statins that's been sent in over here. I'm currently on statins. What's the best method of weaning down on them after having read your chapter in the book?
You don't have to wean down. You can stop them and then repeat, change the diet, repeat them, and see how they do. Most people's numbers get better off the statins than on the statins when they cut out their refined carbs and sugar and eat more fats, because cholesterol is made in your blood from, guess what, from sugar and carbs, not fat. It's hard to believe, but that's actually how it works.
Okay, great. Here's a question about education. My doctor's asking for more resources on the topic of fat. Separate from your book, are there any other websites or articles that you would recommend sending him?
Of course. There's over 500 references in the book. So you can photocopy those to him. And if you get the e-book, I think they're all hyperlinked. I don't know. But they really, really are so many references that document the issues that I'm talking about here. And I think if any doctor wants to dig in, they'll see.
Okay, great. Well, just taking a pause here for a minute here, we have about 9 more minutes here with Dr. Hyman. So we're going to take as many questions as we can, and then we're going to go ahead and pause and have Lisa Fisher, who's a registered dietitian and nutritionist at the Ultra Wellness Center, is going to chime in and take some of the nutritional questions that have been sent in to us. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Again, we appreciate your support in being part of the larger Eat Fat, Get Thin movement by buying a few copies of the book and sharing it with your friends. Dr. Hyman, it really is a movement, and we need everybody's help to spread the word out there. There's been so much marketing over the years of how bad fat is there for you, but it looks like the trend is headed in a different direction. Is that something that you also feel?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we're really seeing a shift in our thinking about fat and food, and, you know, it's changing for sure. There's still some people who are quite concerned about it. But I think it's really a powerful time, and we have to be alert and focused and helpful and, you know, just get into the program.
Okay, fantastic. Well said. Okay, we have a few questions about weight loss. The first question that we have written in here is that it's looks like somebody who's on the challenge right now. I don't know 100% sure. They're on the challenge. They're doing well. They lost the first 5 pounds. They feel a little bit stuck here. Does Dr. Hyman have any other recommendations of things that they should be looking at or trying?
Well, sure. People are stuck. There's this whole diet I call Beyond Food, which is essentially using a various sort of functional medicine approach to dig in and figure out what the other causes of problems are with your metabolism. Because there's a lot of causes of weight loss resistance that are nothing to do with what you're eating. It could be food sensitivities. It could be leaky gut. It could be bacterial overgrowth, yeast overgrowth in your gut. It could be heavy metal toxins, PCBs, phthalates, parabens. It could be infections, latent infections. It could be stress. It could be a whole series of different things. So I go through all of that in the Beyond Food Guide and encourage people to really take a look at that. It's really powerful, and it really guides people into actually what to do.
So there's a question about some of the supplements that are part of the protocol and their impact. I see that Elite is considered as optional or recommended on the program. Is it something that I should use if I'm considering losing a few more pounds on the program? So listeners ask about Elite.
Yeah, the reason I recommend that is because if you cut out sugar and starch and you drop your insulin, you're going to lose a lot of fluid, which is a good thing. But it can make you dizzy and weak and feel tired because your blood volume decreases because you lose sodium. So if you take a little bit of electrolytes, you'll often mitigate that and feel better. You don't have to do it forever, but once your body adapts, you'll be fine in a couple of weeks.
Okay, great. This listener is asking about the FODMAP diet, and they are on a FODMAP diet, but they're also practicing. They want to get on the Eat Fat, Get Thin protocol. They're asking, does Dr. Hyman have any thoughts about FODMAP and in eating in that particular way?
Well, that's really relevant for anybody who is, you know, having digestive issues and bacterial overgrowth, bloating. That's really the issue. So you really want to try to get on a diet that's not going to cause fermentation and bacterial overgrowth. And that's what the FODMAPs diet is. So I don't think everybody has to do it. I think it's really something really important to do in a very limited way when you have guidance from a practitioner.
Okay, this listener writes in that they're struggling with candida currently, and they're wondering whether or not they should do the Eat Fat, Get Thin protocol or they should do something else.
Sorry, say that question again?
So this listener is writing that they are struggling with candida currently.
Candida,
and they're wondering,
okay.
Yeah, if they should do the Eat Fat, Get Thin protocol or if they should go in a different direction.
Well, often just cutting out the sugar and starch from your diet, you won't feed the yeast, so you're going to do better. And second, coconut oil is included and is very antifungal. And third of all, includes a probiotic, which can help. So that often alone is enough to help set everybody back to the straight perspective.
Okay, great. So we have another question that's being written in here. It's a little long. I'm going to try to consolidate it. So on the Eat Fat, Get Thin program to lose weight, are we lowering our BRM or basal metabolic rate? And the follow-up question to that is, once that BMR rate has lowered, you know what? I'm going to come back to this question because I think it's a little bit confusing here. So let's.
I think I know what they're asking. I'll just give a quick answer. I think that if your basal metabolic rate, you're worried about it, it actually gets better when you eat fat. When you eat sugar and carbs, it goes down. And David Ludwig showed this in a great study where two people put about 60% fat, 10% carbs. They burn 300 more calories a day when they're eating the same amount of calories as the ones who are eating 60% carbs and 20% fat.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks for jumping in on that one. Okay, we have a few more questions here that we're going to ask you, Dr. Hyman, before we wrap up with our last 5 minutes and then maybe get some closing thoughts here before we go ahead and invite Lisa Fisher onto the line. So we have another person that says that they're struggling to get their morning sugar down. Any suggestions on how they can do that on this program? They've already lost 16 pounds, and they still have a few more to lose. So if they're following, it looks like they were doing the blood sugar program previously, but they're interested in Eat That, Get Thin. That's what I'm reading into this. Yeah. Any suggestions on how they can continue to get their morning sugar down?
Their morning blood sugar. Yes, I think you have to pay attention to what's going on. If your blood sugar is high in the morning, it could be because of a stress response at night. It may not be what you're eating. You might be going hypoglycemic if you're on medication. If you're on insulin, that might be happening, and then you can rebound with a higher blood sugar in the morning. So it really depends on what's going on for you. Typically, though, people who switching over to eating more fat and less carbs, their sugars will normalize out. So without actually knowing exactly what's happening with you, I can't exactly tell because there are a lot of other reasons besides just a diet.
Okay, great.
But if you're losing weight and things are going in the right direction, it's probably a good thing.
Fantastic. Okay, a few more food questions here. So this person's writing in that they've read and followed the 10-day detox diet, ultra metabolism, and the blood sugar solution, and they all recommend staying away from dairy. Now, in the Eat Fat, Get Thin book, we've discovered that grass-fed butter is good. The question is dairy healthy, or do we still need to stay away from it?
So I think, you know, the question is butter really back? Is butter a health food? I think, you know, if you have allergies to dairy or sensitivity, yeah, butter's not great. You can use ghee, which is a little better, or clarified butter, which takes out all the casein and whey, and it's just butter fat. That's okay. I think that's what the concern is with dairy. It's not the fat, it's the allergens.
All right, great. Another food question here, a common staple that a lot of people eat, and this listener has some questions about it. Is oatmeal a grain, and does Dr. Hyman consider it healthy and something that they can use on the program?
No, oatmeal is not healthy. I mean, you look at the studies on oatmeal, particularly regular oats, silk oats are a little better, but not that much. They do have a high glycemic index. They do cause problems with blood sugar and insulin. So I think we always thought it was a health food, but it isn't. I hate to tell you that.
Okay, great. This is a question about somebody following the Eat Right for Your Blood Type diet. They want to know, what does Dr. Hyman think about the Eat Right for Your Blood Type diet, and does he have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, one of the original diets where people were talking about how to individualize their diets, and I think that's important. I think we are learning that medicine is personalized. And that it's really important to look at which your particular metabolism and biochemistry is. So that's the foundational principle of functional medicine. But it's not necessarily as simple as just a blood type diet.
Okay, great. We'll take one more question here, and then Dr. Hyman would love to get some closing thoughts on some items that I have for you. This last question here is from somebody who's a vegetarian. And they're noticing that they can find it sometimes difficult to be a vegetarian and follow the program. They eat a little bit of fish, but with the restriction on beans and other grains, it's a little difficult. Does Dr. Hyman have any recommendations for vegetarians who are trying to follow the Eat Fat, Get Thin program?
It's hard. I think it's hard. It's very hard to be a vegetarian. I think eating more nuts and seeds, you can, you know, use some beans if you want. Tofu, tempeh are fine. But it is challenging. And I think the truth is that, you know, whole eggs are okay if you want to get some other protein, if you don't want to have meat. But I think, you know, eating a low glycemic vegan diet is tough. And you can do it, but it's hard. And there are there was a patient, for example, who was came to a lecture I gave the other day, and she was type 2 diabetic, had a heart attack, got on the Esselstyn program, which is zero fat. I mean, no oils, no avocados, no nuts and seeds, nothing. And she had another heart attack and couldn't keep her sugars under control. They were just skyrocketing. And she wasn't eating bad foods. She was eating beans and grains and whole foods. And it was really frustrating for her. So I think it's really important for us to sort of look at the individual and see what's working and what's not working, because that's really the key. And if you actually focus on that, then your body will tell you exactly what you need. And I think you just see what your numbers look like and whether you're carbohydrate intolerant or not.
Okay, great. Well, Dr. Hyman, I really appreciate you joining us here on tonight's call. My gist is, from the questions that are being written in here, is that a lot of individuals have not yet embarked on the Eat Fat Get Thin program that are listening in tonight's call, but they're very excited to do that, although it sounds like there are a few challenge members that are out there. Do you have any final words or thoughts for folks who are just about to start this program, might be feeling a little bit nervous, and just sort of trying to navigate around this new idea that actually fat is healthy for you? Any words of wisdom or thoughts for them?
Sure. I mean, I just encourage people to see what's working. You know, do the FLC quiz and see how you feel. If you feel bad, you clearly need to try something different. If you are having serious weight issues and carbohydrate intolerance issues based on the results of your carbohydrate quiz, then again, you know, it's really a good idea to actually try something different. And guess what? The best doctor in the room is your own body. That's why I recommend people do something, try it, see how it feels, and then your body will tell you what works and what doesn't.
All right. Well said. Great, great words of wisdom. Dr. Hyman, we're going to go ahead and bring on Lisa here, Lisa Fisher from the Ultra Wellness Center. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Ultra Wellness Center, it's based out in Lenox, Massachusetts. It's a fantastic clinic that Dr. Jaime is the founder of and the medical director of. And we've invited on tonight's call one of the dietitians and nutritionists from the Ultra Wellness Center. And Lisa, just checking in there. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I'm here, Drew.
Okay, great. It's an honor to have you here with us. Lisa, just going to read your bio out for the folks that are here on the call with us, because you've been up to so many great things. Lisa Fisher is a registered dietitian who has received a master's degree in nutrition and integrative health from Maryland University of Integrative Health. Prior to joining the Ultra Wellness Center team, Lisa was a clinical nutrition specialist working in pediatric gastroenterology and nutrition at the University of Rochester Medical Center. She counseled children, adolescents, and their families dealing with complex gastrointestinal conditions. While in private practice, she counseled adults and children with a wide variety of health concerns using a functional medicine approach. Lisa, it's an honor to have you here with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Drew. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So, Lisa, you know, we have some questions that have written here that we thought would be fantastic for a nutritionist to jump in on. But before I do that, you know, I would love to get your thoughts on sort of a bigger picture topic, which is dietary fat and your own diet. You know, Dr. Hyman talked earlier about having gone through this journey where he really thought a low-fat diet was the healthy recommended choice, and did that for many years because that's what he was taught. How has your own relationship with dietary fat and how much of it to recommend changed or stayed the same over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's actually very similar to Dr. Hyman. You know, when I was first being trained as a dietitian, very similar, you know, food pyramid recommendations. I thought that, you know, brown rice, some lean fish, and maybe some vegetables were good, and that's the way that I ate for a long time. And it was around that time that I started to not feel very well. And I had to go through my own journey of going through things like irritable bowel syndrome, a lot of things like that that started to surface that weren't a problem previously. And once I started to understand and get a sense for functional medicine and the, you know, the root problem and the root cause, I started then to see more that, okay, perhaps the recommendations that I learned in school weren't spot on. It was, you know, they certainly could have been tweaked a little bit, but what I learned as I did change my own diet and added in more fat and started recommending more fat to my patients, just like Dr. Hyman, my energy increased, my skin changed, I was able to think more clearly, to do more things. Not that you need to multitask, I think focusing on one thing is a good thing, but I was able to do those things more efficiently. So it was a very similar journey, and I think that that's kind of the natural progression when people are learning about nutrition in a more conventional setting as I did as a dietitian, but then kind of the evolution of it was really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. Lisa, one of the reasons that I'm super excited to have you here and adding to all the things that Dr. Hyman was sharing is that at the Ultra Wellness Center, you see so many people on a regular basis. It's not just theories, the suggestions that you have for us and the questions that I'm about to ask you. You've actually seen it firsthand work, and you've seen what's worked and not worked for people right there in the office. So super excited. And for those of you that are looking for further support to book a session with the nutritionist, whether that be through teleconsulting or you want to go to the Ultra Wellness Center in person to see them for more complicated issues or additional support, you can check out Ultra Wellness Center is the website, ultrawellnesscenter.com, or you can just go to Google and type in Ultra Wellness Center, and you can learn more about the offerings that the Ultra Wellness Center has for individuals that are there. So, Lisa, I'm going to just jump into a few of the questions that have been sent in to us, and let's start off with the first one. So the first question that we have here is that we have a lot of the community members and folks that are listening tonight who are doing the Eat Fat Get Thin program who have gallbladder issues. What tips and feedback do you have for them and those individuals who are worried about doing the program and whether or not it's a right fit for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a question I get quite a bit from my patients as well, especially since the book came out. You know, we do get a lot of, well, should I be doing this diet? What should I do if I do have these issues with fat? And so let me start with just a brief summary of what the gallbladder is and why it's so important. So the gallbladder is an organ that's attached to the intestines and the liver, as you can kind of visualize. And the purpose is really to store and concentrate bile. And bile is a liquid that we need to break down and absorb fat in the small intestine. And roughly about 700,000 people a year get their gallbladders removed. So I can completely understand why this would be a very common question, and many tens of thousands more suffer with other things that would affect the gallbladder, like gallstones and so on. So while the Eat Fat Get Thin diet's not for everybody, just because you have gallbladder issues does not automatically mean it's not right for you. You know, even if you do have gallbladder issues, there are a couple of things working for you in your favor in relation to this diet. And first, the body is very adaptable, and some research actually shows that there's not much benefit to a lower-fat diet even immediately after somebody has their gallbladder removed. But, you know, for those who do notice abdominal pain, cramping, other GI symptoms when their fat intake increases, the other benefit to the diet is that Dr. Hyman encourages the intake of coconut and MCT oil. And kind of elaborating a little bit more on what he did talk about previously was, so MCT oil, as a lot of you know, stands for medium-chain triglycerides, and this type of fat has a chemical structure that's very different from the other types of fats that you're used to eating in things like olive oil, avocado, nuts, and seeds. And MCT oil doesn't require that bile that's coming from the gallbladder in order to be digested. So having more of this type of fat may actually improve symptoms. And MCTs are actually transported directly from the intestines to the liver, where they can be burned as fuel. And that's why they're able to raise the metabolic rate of people. And coconut oil is made up of about 60% medium-chain triglycerides. So you'll get that benefit from both of them. But you will want to increase MCT slowly, as one of the audience members did point out. I experienced that a lot of times in my own practice when recommending MCT oil. If you're not used to eating a lot of fat overall, or if you haven't had MCT oil, it can cause loose stool if you're doing too much too quickly. And the same goes for fat overall. So just like what Dr. Hyman said, trying to increase it slowly if your body isn't used to that. But if you have chronic gallbladder issues, and even if you notice that MCT oil causes discomfort or symptoms of malabsorption, such as stools that float to the top of the toilet bowl or undigested food in the stool, that's a sign when you might benefit from some digestive enzymes or even bile acid supplementation, which is something that we do for those who have malabsorption issues. But at that point, it's usually best to get for you personalized guidance from a functional medicine physician or nutritionist.
All right. Great answer. Thanks for that. Super in-depth. Okay, so on the topic of this being the fit for the right person or who this program is a right fit for, Can you speak to any other issues that might make the Eat Fat Get Thin program not the best match for somebody out there?
Yeah, I think Dr. Hyman touched on that a little bit too. And just to bounce off of what he said, I was thinking a couple of other people that might not be the best fit. Certainly, if somebody is pregnant or lactating, their carbohydrate needs are probably going to be a bit higher than what's recommended on the diet. So you definitely have to be careful there. And genetics plays a role, actually. And some people really do feel like when they increase their fat, they just don't do as well. And at the Ultra Wellness Center, we actually are able to check genetics and how it pertains to diet. And what I see in some of my patients, it's not the norm, but I've found in some of my patients that they just don't do well with a super high-fat diet. So for those individuals, may not be the greatest fit. Or if you don't have much weight to lose, or if you're trying to maintain your current weight, you know, that might not be the best fit, but there are quite a few people who would benefit from it. You just really have to see, you know, how your body responds, just like what Dr. Hyman was saying.
Okay, great. So the next question that we have here, a lot of people love their coffee, and bulletproof coffee is mentioned in this book. And we were wondering your thoughts about drinking coffee and whether or not it might prohibit somebody from reaching their goals on this program.
Yeah, that's interesting. People love their coffee, and I totally understand why. And let me start by saying that, you know, everybody metabolizes caffeine differently. And again, going back to genetics does play a role in this as well. And on the genetic profile that we check, we can actually see whether you should be drinking beverages with or without caffeine, and that how that could potentially impact your risk for cardiovascular disease over time. It's really fascinating. This whole, the whole field of genetics is exploding. So the things we're able to check for is really incredible. But understandably, myself included, most of us do not have genetic testing to see whether or not we can metabolize caffeine. And for those who don't, really, there's no convincing evidence that an 8 to 10 ounce cup of coffee, you know, once a day does any harm. And in fact, you know, some research does suggest that coffee can reduce the risk of things like diabetes and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. So there's also something to be said, I would think, for the ritual of drinking coffee in the morning, you know, whether it be coffee or tea, but a lot of people really just enjoy the smell of coffee, the flavor of coffee, the act of drinking it. Maybe while they're reading a book or something, it's really a mindfulness practice for a lot of people. And I think if you're able to metabolize it well, if you don't feel anxious or racing heart rate, then having that 8 ounce cup of coffee that's very high quality, organic beans, shouldn't prohibit anybody from reaching their goals on this diet. And there are a couple of considerations I would say and speak to. The first being, you know, if you have any kind of GI issues or gastrointestinal issues, especially if you tend toward having looser stools or diarrhea, especially if you have anything like an inflammatory bowel condition like Crohn's disease or colitis, experiencing urgency, coffee is probably something you want to stay away from because it can make that worse. And the other thing is to remember that the problem usually comes in when people start adding sweetener to their coffee. So that sweet fat combination of cream and sugar can be tempting and addicting, but it, as we know, can be quite detrimental to your health. So the sweetener's out, but the bulletproof coffee can be great because the added fat not only makes it taste like there's cream in the coffee, but most of my patients don't miss the sweetener at all. The high fat content of the bulletproof coffee kind of helps slow the release of the caffeine into your system. So people feel much more satisfied with less, and they don't even really miss the sweetener. So in that way, it can actually help you reach your goals.
All right. I know last year when Dr. Hyman was writing the book, he did a 1,000-person beta program and put people on the Eat Fat Get Thin program. And many of those individuals, the vast majority of them, ended up losing weight. And we have this whole new cycle of people that are going through the program, and there's a lot of questions around weight loss. And so one of the questions that was pretty common that was written in was, should people be expecting to lose weight every day of the program while following Eat Fat Get Thin?
Yeah, that is a good question. And, you know, I think it's pretty common to see a rapid drop of about 10 pounds or so early on. And like Dr. Hyman mentioned before, that's really, most of it is water weight from reducing the carbohydrates and lowering inflammation in the body. eventually, then you should actually see a little bit of a leveling out and then more of a gradual weight loss of about 1 to 2 pounds a week. That's usually a pretty good sign that you're losing fat mass versus muscle mass. And I think something that gets overlooked when we're talking about weight loss is body composition. Everybody focuses on the number on the scale, wanting to get it down. And of course, if you're carrying excess weight, especially around the midsection on your belly, or if you're at higher risk for developing diabetes, cardiovascular disease, then we know that weight loss is not only beneficial, but it's crucial. But it's not just about the number on the scale. It's about the amount of fat that we're carrying versus muscle. And muscle has the biggest impact on metabolism and speeding it up. It weighs more, but it burns more calories. It makes your body more sensitive to insulin. And it even protects against things like bone loss. So it's not enough just to lose weight. It's more important to lose excess fat and gain more muscle to help support that optimal well-being. And, you know, with all that said, I think everybody will respond differently to this diet. Some people may see that drop of 10 pounds right away. Others may not. And that's okay. If you go into the diet expecting to be losing weight every single day, this can set you up for feeling discouraged or frustrated if the number doesn't reflect that expectation. But you also have to think about all the other benefits that you're getting from this diet as well, which include, you know, any diet that's made up of 50 to 75% non-starchy carbohydrates is going to provide a host of benefits, going to be giving you tons of phytonutrients, anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory properties that you really need to help support optimal function at the cellular and the DNA level.
Great answer. Thanks for that breakdown, Lisa. Awesome, awesome, really great. Okay, we have another question that's here. People often come to us and they want to know about heart disease, or they have heart disease and they're worried about eating all this fat. What do you say to people that you work with when they have this concern?
Yeah, you can imagine I hear that a time or two. And what I've really come to say is, okay, let's look at the science. You know, for most people that have cardiovascular disease, it's really due to metabolic syndrome, which is driven by excess carbohydrates, processed foods in general, and then high blood sugar and high insulin levels, not eating too much fat. Many people get concerned when they see their cholesterol levels increase, and I won't, you know, belabor this point because Dr. Hyman spoke to it a little bit, but it's so important to understand the difference between, you know, high cholesterol versus the cholesterol particles and the types of cholesterol that are high. If you have small, dense particles of cholesterol, then this can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease because those small, dense particles are more likely to build up as plaque in the arteries. Whereas if you have larger, more fluffy cholesterol particles, you can kind of think of it like a beach ball. It kind of bounces right off the arteries. It can actually be more protective, even if the numbers are high. So like Dr. Hyman said, and unfortunately that is not a test that's typically run in a conventional laboratory, but it is certainly done. It's being done more so, I think, and certainly in functional medicine organizations. That's sort of like a screening lab for us even. And it turns out, of course, what raises that small, dense particle number is the processed food, the high sugar, the refined carbohydrates, as well as things like the very poor quality fats, like the trans fats, the highly refined oils. So fat quality really, really matters. And, you know, time and time again, the diet that has the most research showing its cardiovascular benefits, and also the diet that's been used traditionally for generations in one of the healthiest cultures around the world is the Mediterranean diet. So my whole thing is, when in doubt, look to dietary patterns that have stood the test of time. So, you know, the Mediterranean diet and the Eat Fat Get Thin plan have so many things in common. They both emphasize kind of at their core a whole food, plant-based diet with at least 50 to 75% of your plate being made up of non-starchy carbohydrates from vegetables, which is sort of the common denominator for all dietary patterns that are promoting heart health. So while the Mediterranean diet is also very high in fat, actually, they emphasize good quality olive oil, nuts and seeds, fatty fish, avocado. You can see a lot of overlap. And this good quality fat, in addition to some quality protein, is crucial for blood sugar control, which helps prevent cardiovascular disease and optimal function of heart health.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you for that, Lisa.
Sure.
Okay, we have about 10 more minutes here, and you know, I have a question that's pretty common that I think would be great to have you break down for us. Can you talk a little bit more about inflammation and how it affects the healing process in the body? A lot of people have questions about inflammation, especially a lot of the new folks that are just finding out about the Eat Fat, Get Thin program that aren't as familiar with Dr. Hyman's work.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely a topic I could talk about for hours, but I'll try to distill it in our short period of time here. So, you know, this is something I discuss a lot with most of my patients because it's well established both in conventional and functional medicine that inflammation is the root cause of many, if not most, chronic conditions. But it's important to understand that there are two different types of inflammation. There's acute and there's chronic. And acute inflammation is natural. It's extremely important, in fact, because it happens in response to things like physical trauma, bacterial or viral infections. If you think about when you get a cut, you see that redness and that swelling and that heat. And that's really to prevent things like infection from spreading and damaging tissue at other parts of the body. So it sets the stage for repair of the damaged area and all that. So this type of inflammation really does. You wouldn't be able to survive without it for very long. And it only usually lasts for days, sometimes weeks, but resolves as the body heals itself. But chronic inflammation is the type that you don't see. It's not the type that causes this surface area warmness or heating. It's something that happens at a very low level. It can go on for months or even years, and that's what we're seeing is that it goes on for years and years, which eventually leads to tissue damage, age-related diseases like heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, and even Parkinson's disease. And there's evidence to show that chronic inflammation can even contribute to things like depression, these psychological conditions, which we thought were just all in our head, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. So, you know, you need to think about what is driving this low-level inflammation. And when I answer that question for myself, it's like, so many of these things, if not all of these things, can be changed and reversed with diet and lifestyle. So the first thing you have to think about is, of course, the diet, the quality of the diet, but especially high sugar and high insulin levels, which are driving inflammation. It's an epidemic. So these types of things you think about, of course, being driven by processed carbohydrates and sugar. And then on top of that, when you're living a sedentary lifestyle, or being exposed to environmental toxins like car exhaust. I mean, who isn't being exposed to those types of things? On top of that, with psychological stress, and the actual fat cells in our body can actually release hormones that lead more to this chronic inflammation. So it is a vicious cycle, and this really touches on the point that the composition and the quality of the diet can either fuel or reduce that inflammation. And, you know, I think the bottom line is that chronic inflammation keeps your body from being able to heal fully. It puts you at risk for developing many diseases over time, and your weight and the quality of your diet can either fuel the fire or can help to put that fire out.
All right. Great breakdown. Lisa, a couple more questions that I have for you here. You mentioned de-stressing. Dr. Hyman talked a little bit about this. You work a lot with people one-on-one. I'm wondering if you have any tips or recommendations or suggestions that you've seen that have worked really well for people who, quite frankly, sometimes have life stressors that interfere with their ability to stay focused and present and actually give love and attention to a plan that they know would work for them.
Yeah, I get this all the time. And I normally have to start small because, like Dr. Hyman said, it's like don't overwhelm yourself with the idea that you have to get up, you have to meditate for an hour a day. That's wonderful, and people who do that have really significant changes in brain function, but that is not necessary to get the benefits of this and stress reduction. So something, just a very practical takeaway, something one of my main go-tos with my patients and also what I've done to help myself de-stress and just take breaks throughout the day. There's something called the 4-7-8 breathing technique, and you inhale for the count of 4, you hold it for a count of 7, and then you exhale for the count of 8. And there's some people say that if you put your tongue at the top of the roof of your mouth while you do this, it can also help to lower blood pressure as well. But if you do this for 4 cycles in a row and you do this twice a day, it's actually been shown if you do it consistently every day for 2 to 3 months, heart rate decreases, the stress response decreases, and what you're doing is you are signaling your parasympathetic nervous system to turn on, and that's the rest and digest portion of your nervous system that helps you to relax, helps you to be more grounded, and it takes no more than 30 to 45 seconds. You do it once in the morning, once at night, or maybe once during the day. No matter what your schedule is, you can stop for that 30 to 45 seconds. Put it in your phone, remind yourself, the more you do it, the more it's going to become a habit, the more you're going to feel benefit from it. And then over time, if something stressful happens, just remind yourself, okay, I'm going to do the breathing, and then I'm going to tackle that issue. So I think that's a really positive thing that people can do. It's quick, it's easy, and I get great feedback about it.
That's fantastic. Lisa, another question that I want to throw out there to you. When I look at a lot of the questions that have been written in, when I hear people on our challenges, when I look at sometimes the undertone or the energy behind it, sometimes really what people are wondering is that, is it okay to invest in themselves? Many people here are busy. They're taking care of family members. They're taking care of other people. They've kind of, quite frankly, put a lot of other people first in their life, and their health has sometimes suffered because of that. And they're getting used to the fact that it's okay to invest in their own health. It's okay to put their health first. And I'm sure as a nutritionist, and people sometimes ask you questions, really you turn into a therapist, and you're talking about other things separate from a meal plan and what foods to eat and what things are there. Do you ever see this in your own practice and one-on-one with patients that are out there, that sometimes people are just having a challenge investing in themselves? And what words of wisdom do you share with them?
Yeah, I get this all the time, and I see it in my own personal life with my friends and family. And a lot of times what's surrounding that is just guilt, guilt of, if I take care of myself, then that takes time away from my family, from my friends, from my responsibilities. And we are a very driven society that's kind of ingrained in us from a very young age. And so we're trying to always give to others, and that's a wonderful thing. But, I always try to tell people, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but you cannot take care of other people efficiently and as well as you'd like to if you don't take care of yourself first. I see so many people come into my office who just, you can tell in their face, they look so depleted. They just look tired. And, I ask them, I know you're trying to take care of your son and your sick mother and you're trying to do school and do all these things. Do you feel like you have that quality time when you're with them? And a couple of times people have actually, started crying. Like you said, I've kind of become this therapist, and they say, well, I try so hard to take care of everybody, but then at the end of the day, I feel like I wasn't present with them when I was with them during the day because I was so exhausted, or I didn't eat a full meal, so I felt kind of shaky and foggy-headed, and I couldn't really be there with them. And we just work to see if we can find those snippets of time throughout the day where it's a balance of taking care of yourself and not neglecting what you have to do and not neglecting the other things you have to take care of, but just finding some practical time that really is dedicated to them and honoring that time, because I do think it's a big problem for people, and they really kind of lose their way a little bit. And once we can bring in a little bit of time, they start to notice the benefit. They start to notice that they can take care of their loved ones better and just be more present in the moment, a moment with them. And then their family members respond. So then they start to see it's like this cycle. So it starts with just small little intervals of taking care of yourself, and it kind of perpetuates from there. But it's a great question, Drew.
Yeah, I know it's something that everybody can relate to. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we always share with people is that, what's the point of investing all this effort and energy into our health and putting so much time into it and sometimes money and resources and reading? And, you know, when our health is on point, it gives us the ability to give love and attention to everything else in our life that matters. Maybe for you, you're starting a new business. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's playing with your grandkids. Whatever it might be that's important to you, when you feel good about your health, you have the ability to give love and attention to everything else that's there. And Lisa, you said that very well in your answer. So Lisa, so many great answers here. I would love for you to share a little bit. You're a nutritionist at the Ultra Wellness Center. Is it possible, if people want to work with you one-on-one, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, a lot of people think with the Ultra Wellness Center, who are familiar with it, that you have to be a patient there, seeing a physician as well. But there's actually something that we have called nutrition-only appointments. So, you know, in functional medicine, I think you all know, we recognize food truly is our medicine. And so much can be done with a food plan. You know, for people who are a bit sicker, who might need a physician, you know, we can start with nutrition and then go from there. But if you're interested on just a little bit more personalization of the diet, or interested even in learning a bit more about genetics and how that interacts with your diet and what diet plan might be right for you, all of that, you can contact the Ultra Wellness Center and ask for a nutrition-only appointment, and they'll be able to set you up from that point on, because I really do. I love what I do. I'm fortunate enough to be working with the best of the best in the world, and if I don't have the answer for you, I'll know somebody who does. So, yeah, please give a call if you're interested in working one-on-one.
And Lisa, my mom, who you're working with, says hi, and she wanted me to tell her, she wanted me to tell everybody here on this call that she's loving her nutrition appointment with you. So just wanted to add that into the picture.
Tell her I say hi.
Yeah. Well, everyone, thank you so much. We've come up at the end of our time here. I want to thank Dr. Mark Hyman for joining us this evening and answering so many of the incredible questions. I want to thank Lisa for joining us here tonight, representing the Ultra Wellness Center and tackling some of these incredible and in-depth nutrition questions. I want to thank you all for joining us here this evening. We'll have a recording of tonight's call that we'll send out as a recap tomorrow morning, so that you can listen to it whenever you'd like. We'll also link up some of the resources that have been mentioned in this call here too. Thank you for being part of the movement and helping spread the word, and wish you all a great evening. Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you so much, Dr. Hyman.
Thank you.